should they provide military or other assistance. That, of course, violates sanctions or supports the war effort, that there will be significant consequences.
Memo to Beijing, don't help Moscow. It's Wednesday, March 16th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. You'll also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, the financial cost of war, digital soldiers in Ukraine, furry friends rescued, semiconductor shortage, and women of courage. It's all on today's VOA Asia. China defended its stance on the Ukraine conflict Tuesday with Foreign Ministry spokesperson Zhao Lijian saying China was, quote, deeply grieved by the current situation in Ukraine and said it was committed to promoting peace talks.
China's position and statement on the Ukraine issue is completely objective, impartial, and constructive. We have a clear goal, that is to promote the de-escalation of the situation and end the conflict as soon as possible. We believe China's position will be understood and supported by more and more countries.
This comes after a stern warning from Washington over Beijing's relationship with Moscow. China has refused to condemn Russia's invasion of Ukraine and, as its largest trading partner, holds the ability to help it evade sanctions. VOA's Anita Powell brings us the latest from the White House.
As Russian troops rain down terror over Ukraine, this unassuming Italian hotel is the latest front in the fight over the nation's fate. On Monday, U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan met in Rome for 7 hours with Yang Jieshe, Chinese director of the Office of the Foreign Affairs Commission. Administration officials described it as an intense meeting in which Washington reminded Beijing, privately, of the consequences of China violating sanctions to fund Russia's war effort.
I think what we have conveyed and what was conveyed by our National Security Advisor in this meeting is that should they provide military or other assistance, that of course violates sanctions or supports the war effort, that there will be significant consequences. But in terms of what those specifics look like, we would coordinate with our partners and allies to make that determination.
In just under 3 weeks of fighting, the nation has hemorrhaged more than 2.8 million refugees. Most are women and children, as able-bodied Ukrainian men are forbidden from leaving. Civilian volunteers under the command of President Volodymyr Zelensky now form the bulk of the resistance against the professional Russian army. Washington says it will not send American troops to Ukraine, has dismissed Zelensky's appeals for a no-fly zone, and rejected a Polish proposal to send their Russian-made jets to a U.S. airbase in Germany to be sent to Ukraine. On Saturday, President Joe Biden authorized up to $200 million worth of American assistance in the form of military education and training for the Ukrainian army. Over the weekend, four U.S. senators visited Poland, a top refugee destination.
What I saw at the border was the need for the United States to act immediately, not tomorrow, not next year, now. There is an urgency to this moment that demands the world's attention, as well as the American people's.
Senator Amy Klobuchar told VOA that the U.S. still has options to aid Ukraine.
We're not going to give Vladimir Putin a roadmap of how that can be done. There are many ways, whether it is more drones, whether it is other weapons that can help. Clearly, we are all committed to doing that. We must do more.
Senator Rob Portman said China also has a role to play.
China needs to be careful here because the United States of America has the ability through our market to make the Chinese economy falter as well in significant ways. They depend on us. And you know, we are interdependent in a sense, too.
A Chinese foreign ministry spokesman told journalists Monday that China has been playing a constructive part in promoting peace talks in Ukraine and charged the U.S. with making false accusations. He did not confirm or deny a direct question asking if China planned to support Russia in the future. Also on Monday, Russian and Ukrainian delegations held a fourth round of peace talks virtually. Zelensky says he is aiming for a face-to-face meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Even far-flung nations are getting involved. VOA asked Saki if the White House was considering South African President Cyril Ramaphosa's offer to mediate between the two parties.
There have been a half a dozen global leaders who have been meeting with both the Russians and the Ukrainians and engaging, of course, directly through diplomatic channels and trying to come to a diplomatic diplomatic conclusion here. We have been engaged directly with them on the front end and back end of those conversations and encourage them to also make sure they are engaging with the Ukrainians and not just the Russians.
And Zelensky, who's refused to leave his country but has issued a stream of videos to both civilians and lawmakers around the world, is himself opening a new virtual front. On Wednesday, he will speak before a closed joint session of the U.S. Congress. Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
We invite you to read more on our top story by going to our website, voanews.com. Plus, of course, you can follow us on social media. We're at Twitter at VOA Asia or on Facebook, VOA Asia. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Australian court overturns ruling requiring mine approvals to weigh climate harms. British national warned of prison time over NGO. Ukraine war gives Taiwan's military reservist reform new impetus. U.S. sanctions Russians over support for North Korea weapons program. Thousands of refugees in Indonesia shut out from public facilities. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The Ukrainian government is doing what it can to keep the country's economy running during Russia's invasion. Still, its money is running out fast. On March 10th, the International Monetary Fund Executive Board approved a $1.4 billion loan to Ukraine, but experts say it will not last long. Oksana Budratenko has the story narrated by Anna Rice.
Despite Russia's invasion of Ukraine extending into a third week, the country's economy, including banks and transfers, keeps functioning, though a lot has had to be adjusted and altered.
I would like to applaud Ukrainian authorities for the dedication and effort and success that they've had so far managing the situation. We know that the central bank is working very actively.
To keep things going, the National Bank of Ukraine had transferred close to 19 billion hryvnia, the equivalent of roughly $630 million, to its state budget. It also limited all foreign exchange transactions and is managing the exchange rate to keep it stable. Banks have introduced repayment holidays for their clients, says Alexander Petrik with the Council of the National Bank of Ukraine.
There are limitations on withdrawing cash, not just organizationally speaking. Realistically, delivering cash to ATMs is very risky at the moment because many large cities are home to military actions.
But local businesses have figured out a workaround.
Whoever needs cash can get it. And there is another solution that I think is ingenious. It's a win-win. Retailers now work as ATMs. You can get cash at the cash register. That way, we can avoid additional cash in transit operations and not risk lives.
Still, when a large portion of the economy is immobilized, money gets spent very fast. So on March 10th, the IMF Executive Board approved a $1.4 billion loan to Ukraine. But even that might not be enough.
My concern is that the loan so far being discussed might be enough for months rather than a full year financing. So the gap is going to be extraordinary.
Rybakova says the invasion will hurt profits and has damaged the country's ability to produce goods. At the same time, the money the government has to spend during an invasion means expenses go way up. But Ukraine can get some additional funds, says Oleg Churey, former deputy head of Ukraine's central bank.
I can see the possibility of getting additional funding. Last year, the allocation of SDR equivalent of about $650 billion took place. It would be great if developed countries like the U.S. or European countries could transfer their share of SDRs to Ukraine. If this mechanism works, Ukraine's budget will have enough funds.
The National Bank of Ukraine is expecting more financial aid from donors.
According to the estimates by the National Bank, we expect financial aid of some $15 billion in the near future to come from international organizations, our partner countries, etc. The whole world is supporting Ukraine today.
Ukraine's economy is having to adjust quickly to a martial scenario. But despite the relative flexibility of government financiers, the country will need international help to stay afloat. For Oksana Bedratenko in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, finding victory on the digital battlefield. Happening now in Asia. An Indian court has rejected a plea by some college students that wearing the hijab is an essential practice in Islam. The plea was made after several government-run institutions banned the wearing of the headscarf by Muslim students in a move that raised religious tensions. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. So happy you've decided to join us here on VOA Asia. When the Ukrainian government issued an international call for cyber warriors, this Silicon Valley tech executive signed up. Michelle Quinn and Matt Dibble have the story.
Horrific scenes in Ukraine have spurred many foreign nationals to join the fight alongside the Ukrainian army. Other volunteers are joining a digital war effort, a so-called IT army, overseen by Ukraine's Minister of Digital Transformation. Gennady Galanter is one of them. Born in Ukraine, he now lives in California, where he runs a Silicon Valley tech company. Each day, he checks to see if there are missions that someone with his tech skills can carry out.
Basically, they compile a list, and they offer capability, scripts, that we as individuals can run, each of us can run at home in our office, remotely.
Today's target is a Russian government media outlet. And the weapon is what hackers call a denial-of-service attack.
That's a newspaper. KP.ru. Okay. KP.ru. This is their propaganda machine. It says there is more and more evidence that the special operation that Russia saved the world. Let's take it down. Boom. And here you go. Here you go. So it's running. It's attacking. It's bombarding right now. Yeah, it's not opening up. I think it's dead already.
These attacks are temporary, but Galanter hopes they will get the attention of Russian citizens.
It's going to make other people's life more difficult in Russia, not being able to conduct some of the business. We're trying to steer them. We're trying to poke them. We're trying to poke them. Go do something. It's your president. Go do something.
Galanter grew up in Odessa, a city on the Black Sea. He returns frequently for work and was there in February when the Russian army invaded.
I went to my mother's graveyard, and as I was standing there, I didn't know whether I was going to be back at all.
The 59-year-old considered staying and joining the army.
I have a daughter, I have my wife, and I have my company, and so I couldn't just stay and fight.
Galanter says that people he knows in Russia only have access to the Kremlin's version of the invasion. His next goals with the IT army will be to fortify Ukrainian cybersecurity and find ways to get accurate information to Russians.
Technology leaders can do a lot from this side. I'm just a guy, but I'm a guy who is a patriot, and I'm trying to do something.
Matt Dibble for VOA News, Portola Valley, California.
You can read and see much more on this story and others at VOA Asia Facebook.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA programs. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
Happening now in Asia. The families of Australians killed in the downing of a Malaysia passenger airliner have welcomed Canberra's decision to launch legal action against Russia. All 298 people on board, including 38 Australian citizens and residents, died when a Russian-made missile hit the plane. All the big stories coming your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Ukrainian families crossing the border into Poland say taking their pets with them made the journey to escape the Russian invasion much more difficult. But they tell VOA's Celia Mendoza the pets are like family. Leaving them behind was not an option.
3-year-old Puma belongs to Irina Borgodova. She's one of thousands of pets in Ukraine that, like their owners, are looking for a safe place. The Russians attack her home in Kyiv.
I live my life, my friends, my business, my home, and my dog live her friends too. It's terrible, and it should be not.
Irina Borgodova waits at the Shemesh train station to board a train to her final destination. As of now, Tallinn, Estonia. Moving pets across multiple borders can be challenging due to regulations in each country. Many require them to be vaccinated and microchipped. The International Fund for Animal Welfare says that in the face of this crisis, Belgium, Switzerland and France, among others, are making exceptions.
I have a plastic bowl for the pets, for the cats and dogs, and we help people who have small puppies, small dogs, and they run from the war.
Jack is one of the lucky animals who made it out of Ukraine, but others have been left behind.
When the women have a big dog, they have a problem because big dogs, big cats is not to the train. It's a problem.
Slodova says this has forced many families to leave their pets in Ukraine, something that Anselia Petrovna never considered when she decided to live with Charlie.
He's coming with me. I cannot leave him. He's my son. You cannot abandon your dog in any way.
Amid all the uncertainty, some refugees say escaping with their pets is helping them get through these traumatic times. Celia Mendoza, VOA News, Shemesh, Poland.
Making headlines in Asia. The number of new COVID-19 cases in China more than doubled Tuesday as the nation struggles with its biggest outbreak of the disease since the start of the pandemic 2 years ago. That's despite its zero COVID strategy. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia. While millions of Americans are seeking a new set of wheels, finding inventory remains challenging as demand outpaces supply amid a global semiconductor shortage that has hobbled many assembly lines. VOA's Kane Farabaugh has more from Chicago.
Since the pandemic began, it's been anything but business as usual for workers like Chris Pena at the Ford Assembly Plant outside Chicago.
You know, just logistically, getting parts in from all over the U.S. and all over the globe has been really challenging, and it's been a stop and go through these past 2 years. At Chicago Assembly Plant, we can turn out, you know, thousands of cars per day. But, you know, this has really slowed production down, and this week we're on a layoff temporarily.
It's the latest in a series of work stoppages at plants across the country, as Ford and other manufacturers struggle to meet increased demand for new vehicles amid a global shortage of semiconductors, or chips, which control electronic systems in most vehicles.
It's not just one microchip. I mean, these cars have multiple microchips in them that run different components.
General electronics are being impacted by, you know, by this as well.
John Delasassi is a professor of electrical engineering at the University of Illinois. He says automotive manufacturers reacted to the lockdowns and layoffs brought on by the coronavirus pandemic and ordered fewer microchips, incorrectly anticipating reduced demand for new vehicles.
I think they were expecting the demand of things to crash. In response to that, they reduced their forecasts to the chip suppliers. That caused them to reallocate their capacity to other places. And when the demand came back faster than expected, the automakers no longer had a place in the queue, so to speak. And that caused the shortage there.
De La Sassi says another factor in the shortage is the lack of domestic production.
I think in 1990, the U.S. Had 37% of the global semiconductor manufacturing capacity. Today, it's down to 12%. And a lot of that has gone overseas, particularly to Asia.
Despite those global supply shortages, when production is underway, vehicles like these Ford Explorers continue to roll off the Chicago assembly line without semiconductors in them, creating other issues.
Production still goes, even if we can't get the part. We're going to try and build most of the car that we can and then get it to a lot, which is being leased on, by Ford Motor Company. There's multiple lots being leased where they can just put cars for now.
Which is where they sit and wait by the thousands for chips to arrive and workers to complete the installation.
We haven't been able to go to full production. So right now we're in repair mode and trying to fix the cars that have been built with the actual components as we get them in. And right now we're not getting these components in fast enough.
As new vehicles sit and wait by the tens of thousands for semiconductors to complete them, Americans looking to buy used vehicles are paying 40% more on average than they were just over a year ago. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reports new vehicle prices also rose 12% in the same period. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Chicago, Illinois.
From Brazil to Bangladesh, Nepal to Vietnam, the U.S. State Department is honoring 12 women from around the world for fighting corruption, gender violence, and discrimination to build more open, peaceful societies. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more on the 16th Annual International Women of Courage Awards.
Just days after women marched in the streets for International Women's Day, the U.S. State Department recognized 12 women across the globe for their courageous work while pausing to remember the women of Ukraine.
Millions of Ukrainian women have fled their country with their families. Millions more have stayed to help their country fight against Russia's unprovoked, unjustified war.
Advocating for more peaceful, open societies is a common theme among the 12 women honored this year.
This year's Women of Courage are making our world more peaceful, more just. Across four continents, they're tackling complex challenges from organized crime to environmental degradation. They're advancing the rights of women, girls, LGBTQI plus people, and other marginalized groups. And despite harassment, violence, imprisonment, they persist.
From Liberian women rights activist Focia Boyona Harris.
Her bravery to stand up to counter-protesters and aggressive security personnel were pivotal during a three-day anti-rape protest in August 2020 that directly led President George Weah declaring rape a national emergency and announcing other initiatives crucial to protecting Liberian women.
To Moldovan parliamentarian Doina Gherman.
She led the passage of landmark legislation establishing electoral gender quotas that resulted in women now holding 40% of the seats in Moldova's parliament, an all-time high.
These women have redefined courage, said keynote speaker and honoree Nadja Mangoush, the first female foreign minister of Libya.
When you decide to listen to your true self, when it is hard to speak up, when you decide to be a woman in senior position, knowing that that means when you be under the microscope all the time, being judged, criticized, and bullied, that courage. Women who decide to risk it all and leave their home, countries, their safe havens, in search of self-fulfillment elsewhere, that is courage.
First Lady Jill Biden said telling these stories of courage advances women everywhere.
We will continue to work with passion and persistence, with development and democracy, to stop those who wish to silence you. And we will tell your stories, even when you cannot.
More than 167 women from dozens of countries have been honored with the award since 2007. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. Enjoy the day.